It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
You may have to adjust your mic because it was knocked over and put back up, so I don't know if it's in the right position.
Okay.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world to be tried for crimes against humanity in the International Court at The Hague and found innocent. Well,
Not guilty.
Yeah. Technicality we got off. Yeah, sorry. We're not technically found innocent. We
let's be clear.
Yes, we were not found guilty, and we.
It
were
would
released.
Be interesting if we were found innocent, though, wouldn't it? Like,
yeah, no,
if the international court said that we
yeah,
were
no,
innocent,
they definitely did not do that. No, it was one of those like Miranda rights deals. It wasn't obviously that. This is, you know, different, but it's one of those like everybody knew we were guilty, but technically,
Interpol made a big mistake.
Yeah.
They'll be kicking themselves for that.
Does that happen, I wonder? Like, if you are an individual who gets tried for anything in the International Court, in The Hague, does anybody ever get found not guilty? I've never heard of that.
Well,
I feel like it must happen.
So far, it seems like it would be very hard for that to even begin to happen.
Well, that's the thing. It's like if you get
without
to
it
that
being a
court,
done deal, yeah.
We basically know you're the devil. But it's
well, no.
still a court, so like
no,
theoretically,
no, no. No, I
innocent
mean,
until proven guilty.
The thing is, there are a lot of things that they would try to try there that would be very difficult to prove.
Yeah, I guess maybe certain things would. Yeah,
I mean, you know. Like genocide, for example, everybody can acknowledge it happened. I mean, we have all the evidence that happened, but to connect that particular thing to a person or a group of people who, let's say, we also know they weren't there, so their guilt has to be through they gave the order or something like that.
Yeah,
that might be hard to prove.
I thought your argument was going to be genocide was tricky because they're all gone, so we're like, what? Who are you talking about?
No.
What species of people? No, they're gone.
No, I meant that a lot of times the people they're trying there are not the people who actually committed the crime, but who are supposed to be responsible through, you know, some kind of paper trail, if you will, that paper trail might not any longer exist.
I mean, it doesn't come up. Like, you get people who are supposed to be tried at The Hague. That doesn't come up real often. Of that number, a very small number actually get tried at The Hague, because, like, you know, they hide in non-extradition countries.
Yeah, yeah.
But of those number, I've never heard of anybody like, oh, yeah, and then they left. Like, it's always bad once you're there and it's happening.
Yeah, pretty much. Although, to be honest, I don't think I've ever, you know, whenever I've seen a story about a trial commencing there, which is really rare, I've never, like, just watched it to see what would happen. I've never done that.
I
couldn't even tell you if anyone's ever been found guilty or what the consequences are if they've been found guilty. I don't even know. I mean, what happens when you're found guilty by the International Tribunal at The Hague? I mean,
I could tell you, because I remember a time, but really, part of the punishment involves not knowing beforehand. Makes it scarier, if that's what they told me.
And who makes sure the sentence gets carried out?
They wear a hood, I'll tell you that much.
I'm sure it's easy to find out, and I just don't know.
Like
lots of things I don't know.
Handle things. Anyway, I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 156.
Before we get too further into this, we need to explain how this works. For those of you who are just listening for the first time, we have a hat. It is magical. It has its own email address. That email address is themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Once again, that is themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. wonderful listeners and people and just bright souls throughout the known universe, write into this email address. They write in with comments, questions, topics, things like that. Things they want to be discussed on this podcast. The hat, in and of itself, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them. Those manifest physically within the hat, and we, William and Tony, draw out those note cards at random from the hat, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored. We do that for about an hour. That's the show.
There's always something in there.
I have to make
an amendment. Get here, there it is.
Last episode, I neglected, I think, some pretty big shit about my week.
Oh, okay.
That I did not discuss.
Good, you can cover it.
Did I talk about GamerCon?
Well, it seems like you mentioned going, but it doesn't...
I think I remember mentioning that I was going to go, but I don't think I talked about having gone.
Well, I'm pretty certain you didn't talk about what you did there, which I'm really surprised I didn't ask.
Yeah, I think we both blanked for some reason.
Dave Avid was there, I'm
Dave,
sure.
Dave Avid is running a whole deal now.
Yeah.
Which seems to be going pretty well. I had a terrible time at GamerCon. Actually, let me rephrase that. I had a terrible time that weekend. In that very little of it was at GamerCon. I went Friday night to a game. Had a great time. It wore me out so much that I couldn't go the next day at all. And I didn't feel like going on Sunday. But I had planned. I was in two games, signed up for two games on Saturday, and I was going to do some shopping at the vendors and stuff. Missed the whole thing. So I was very disappointed in that. The one game I played in was very cool for a lot of reasons. One is the person that was running it is somebody that I've been trying to meet for a few years now. Her name is Tasha Robinson. Some of you may remember her as a regular staff member and contributor to the AV Club.
Oh.
She was a regular, she was a staff member there. Recently, a few of them have left and founded their own company, and she was one of those. But she was on there, and I was always a big fan of her there. Also, she's friends with two of my players in my game group, which for years I had heard about their friends, Bob and Tosh, and it took me a long time to find out this was the same person. And so I've been trying for a while, but then there were things. 1 year she didn't go to GamerCon, 1 year I didn't go to GamerCon, but this year she was there, and I got to play in her game. And the game was in a system called Tremulous, which I had never heard of before, which is apparently a variant on the Apocalypse World and Dungeon World game systems, which some of you will know. It's a type of indie game system that has come out recently, been very popular. Dave Avid is big into that system as a whole. Actually, more than that, Christopher Mosaka over on Happy Jacks was really big into Apocalypse World and Dungeon World. In fact, I may have misspoken about you, Dave. I apologize. But this particular one, it's a like a Cthulhu-based thing. Like Call of Cthulhu kind of stuff. So we played that. We were all in the town of Arkham in this little inn and tavern place. And then hijinks ensued. And much to my surprise, we all survived. And none of us went, like, completely insane. That's unusual for a Cthulhu game.
Yeah, I mean, because... I mean, I don't know anything, but I know that in those games, those are the options.
Some people went kind of insane.
There's not really anything between.
But nobody went, nobody like locked up for the rest of their life crazy, and nobody died.
That is amazing.
We did pretty well all around. It was fun. We had a good time. I played the handyman.
Did she do that on purpose, do you think? Do you think she...
I don't believe so, no. Especially with a one-shot. Who the fuck cares?
Well, right, but...
And there were close calls.
I mean, does it... I mean, if you're the person who's running the game, I mean, can't you design it so that that just doesn't happen?
Theoretically, you can. Sometimes it will be very obvious if that's the case. The way she ran it, it wasn't. I don't think she ever rolled. I think we rolled, and quickly we found out roughly what numbers meant good and what numbers went bad. I mean, there was a lot of stuff, because it's sort of a gradual scale, so we'd know that, like, 8 wasn't success, but it was pretty close to success, and 9 was a success, but not a good one. She would determine what exactly that meant, but, like, we would have known if we're like, I got a 3, and she's like, oh, you're fine, you know, that kind of thing. So she pretty much played by the rules, but the other thing is there's no incentive to do it in a one-shot. And a one-shot dying can often be the coolest thing. Go out in a huge blaze of glory. You get to do shit that you'd be too scared to do in a campaign because you don't want to lose your character.
Okay, but this is what I'm saying. I mean, would a game of this sort, based on Cthulhu, would it be considered a weakness that the game allowed everybody to get through it without dying or going insane?
No, actually. Here's the thing.
Okay.
Because for years and years, a lot of people have considered the Cthulhu games, especially Call of Cthulhu, the original BRP one, their weakness to be that it is very difficult. You can't ever run a campaign in them because even through one adventure, odds are everybody's going to end up either dead or insane.
Right.
But people have said, no, not if you do it right. Huh. You can have quite a campaign because here's the thing. If I have a campaign, or if I have an adventure, where you and your comrades, whatever the hell you know, whatever the hell you do, seriously doesn't matter, accidentally go and wake up like an old one, yeah, you're not going to survive, and your people eat yourself. But that's not how you do it. Like, you start with, like, little, like the scion of the scion of the littlest possible harbinger of the beginning of... Like, you can start off with stuff that basically just looks like an X-Files episode. And you build up... In our case, there was big stuff happening,
mm-hmm.
but it was in the process of happening.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we were dealing with two different sets of cultists with different agendas, who were just people,
mm-hmm.
And a couple of weird monsters that did almost mess us up really bad.
Mm-hmm.
But involving a lot of defensive truck driving and motorcycle driving, we got around that. And there was a little bit of possession and stuff, but no, I mean, it was doable.
There was a little bit of possession and stuff.
We didn't have any godlike beings just, like, there to fuck with us. So
yeah, that would make the game end pretty quickly.
Given the story, I am pleased that we survived. I'm not super surprised. I wouldn't have been surprised if some of us had died or gone crazy. I got close. Like, pretty much as soon as the actual monster showed up, looking at them screwed up your sanity really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And screwed up some more than others. Some who might have been driving trucks at the time. No, I think it worked. And I think it's a better game because it's too much of a foregone conclusion otherwise. And yeah, there's not much of an adventure. You're walking around. Oh, something weird's going on. Let's go in here. Oh, look, actual Cthulhu. Dead. Like,
okay, Now... Does it always work the same? I mean, are these creatures paying attention to you or to our planet or whatever because there are cultists who have somehow made that happen? Or did you just happen to be in the way while they're passing by on their way to do something else?
The answer to that is more looking at Lovecraftian fiction.
Well, right, but the point
is... Because in Lovecraftian fiction... There's usually certain elements, and those translate over here, which is usually a couple things come together.
Okay.
Either the stars are aligned, and some damn cultists are trying to do something that will raise somebody, contact somebody, make favor with somebody. This is the common one. Cultists fuck up everything. Cultists, the stars are aligned. There is a congregation right now, so the cultists come and do some shit.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is somebody's exploring something really, really old, and they accidentally unleash something.
Mm.
This is pretty much the things. In this case, it was cultists who were trying to bring forth this freaky thing, and there was another group of cultists who were basically trying to kill Steel. They were going around trying to... It's difficult to explain, but basically they were trying to mark everybody with a particular sigil associated with them in the hopes that... when the big bad thing came out and ate everybody, it would register that essentially they get credit for those ones. These were some weird-ass redneck cultists.
That's interesting.
At a certain point, our most knowledgeable guy actually said, you have to be the worst cultists I have ever encountered.
Okay, but now, there's never a situation where... Because one of the things about Lovecraft stuff is that, you know, there's this notion that, you know, there... The universe has been around for a really long time, and there are things in the universe that have been around a really long time. And in, you know, Earth, the solar system even,
yeah.
is just nothing in comparison.
Yeah.
So presumably, you know, some of these beings who my understanding is whatever it is they're doing, you don't know why I understand it. I mean, it's just, they're just doing it. It is beyond you to understand. That at some point, they would just be in your neighborhood doing things that they do that you can't comprehend, but it is nevertheless going to destroy you or cause you problems.
Theoretically, any Lovecraftian role-playing campaign, and it has to end in tragedy, essentially, if it goes on long enough. If you end it in victory, it means you stopped it sooner than, I mean, because you can have little things, you know, oh, the followers of whatever are trying to do stuff. And you could have a whole campaign where you're fighting for control of a city with them or whatever, and eventually drive them out. But yeah, eventually, the big shit is going to do what it wants to do, and you are out of luck. So all you are doing is eking out a little more existence for humanity.
Well, I suppose
in traditional Lovecraft, people have now made science fiction ones.
Yeah.
Where, like, the end times are happening, and we've built all sorts of weird cybernetic gear and shit, and we're full-on at war with the old ones and everything else, and we actually can fight back. In most Cthulhu-based games, which made this one weird, firearms abilities are more of a detriment than a help, because you're dumb enough to think that bullets might do something, and they never do. This game, we were dealing with a lot of cultists and shit, so actually our firearms Flashlights helped a lot more.
That's kind of the point of Lovecraft, in my understanding, is that
you can't win.
Yeah, there's no way to win.
Yes.
So I suppose it wouldn't make much of an adventure if, you know, some terrible creature just showed up in your neighborhood and bad things were happening, because then it's just going to go bad. I mean, you've got to have it initiated by something or someone. So that's probably why they all start like that.
It potentially, like I said, if you can go for the smallest of the small. Like, you know, I don't know enough of the mythos, but there are things that, like, this is a scary monster and it has these generals, and then there are these little things that are just creepy fucking things. Like, one of those in a city, if you got a bunch of people together and they worked really hard, maybe they could defeat that one. So you can do it that way.
Mm.
But most often, it's people trying to put shit in motion that you're screwed.
Well, now, here's a question I've often had about that is, you know, even in regard to some stuff that Lovecraft did, why... If the beings in the universe are just beyond comprehension and that they barely even notice we exist, and if they happen to destroy us, it's completely coincidental to whatever else they're doing. How can anything human beings like cultists, for example, do have an impact on them or invite them here or anything else? I mean, how's that work?
Well, then the argument is that it is not like cultists are mostly deluded about this. There are certain things that are known that can summon attention, that is, you know, forbidden knowledge that was picked up, that people went insane just to learn and is written in books, like the Necronomicon.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuff, in certain circumstances, when you do everything right, the stars are perfect and you've killed virgins of like 200 goddamn ones, and you say the words, which will actually rend your jaw from your face by the time you finish them, just right, is the equivalent of poking one of them and being like, hey, over here. But that's about it.
I mean, I see.
And again, there's such a hierarchy.
Yeah, yeah.
So what you can do is you can summon the harbinger of the dude, of the uncle, of the nephew, of something.
Right.
But yeah, cultists are all idiots. There's a lot of horror movies that aren't even Cthulhu mythos based, but when you get horror movies when people are trying to summon powerful demons, the basic plot is we stop them or they summon the demon and we'll all die.
Or maybe the universe starting a chain reaction of some kind.
Terrible shit will happen. But that's always the victory condition. In video games, frequently... role-playing games and stuff, you get to the end and they do successfully do it, but you're so awesome at that point that you kill the demon or whatever. But in actual, like, horror movies, no. It's, we stop them before they wake it up, or we're fucked.
Right, right.
And pretty much Cthulhu's always like that, too.
Although, you know, the whole... I don't know how far back the whole summoning things... I mean, you know, back in the... when do I want to say? Like, in Queen Elizabeth's time, the first.
Yeah.
And I think she consulted that alchemist, or that... Was he an alchemist, or just a... What was it? John Dee was his name.
Yeah.
Enochian symbols and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, these books about Solomon... King Solomon having these books about summoning demons and controlling demons and stuff. So at least that far back, people were believing in these things and making these little sigils and stuff. So that's been around for a really long time.
To me, it's a basic thing. It's a basic component, honestly, of religion, the evolution of religion. As soon as you think of conscious entities that are above you, that are beyond you, which you do as soon as you start coming up with reasons why it thunders outside,
yeah.
You come up with a thing or a someone who's responsible for that, and as soon as you get that, then you start coming up with the, how could I talk to them?
No,
how could I bring
right.
them
and,
here?
And you've got shamanism where you like go to where they are
exactly,
and ask them
exactly,
questions
yeah.
and bring some of their power back.
Yeah.
So for as long as there's been humans, there's probably been summoning great powers to your will or whatever. But what I'm talking about is specifically using symbolic, you know, circles and certain exotic languages and pictures and things. You know, that... It seems like that goes back also quite a way. Maybe just as soon as they had writing, people were doing that.
Dresden,
well, you know, now that I think about it, a lot of people say cave paintings were that kind of thing.
The Dresden Files has an argument when, in their rules on how magic works, when you're mortal casting spells, most of them use Latin or a dumbed down version of Latin, but basically you need to use a language that you don't ever speak.
Oh, so you don't accidentally...
Well, no, but more than that, because it's a mindset thing. But yeah, so you don't... It needs to be very clear in your head, this is magic time, this is normal
yeah,
time.
Yeah, yeah.
So that you aren't just in every day, if you direct your will at something, it catches fire or
right,
whatever.
Right, right.
But anyway, so I played that game, and that game was very fun. My game went on this week. Pretty good. It was a short, it was just sort of role playing. I think we rolled dice like twice or something. They got back from their crazy, I told you about the crazy trip with all the tubes sticking in people and alien. All that shit. Well, they came back from that. And it turns out that this future government that sent them to do all this, maybe sort of now decides they're loose ends and is going to kill them off.
Well, you mean they finished whatever the government wanted them to
do? Yeah, the government wanted them to go check out those ruins. And all that crazy shit happened. And they're like, okay, whatever it was just left. Because it did. It broke through the thing and it left. So then they were flying back. And they're like, okay, so we'll tell the government. And then I don't know what they'll do next. Well, they get back. And their pilot, there was a guy who was flying them. He parked somewhere else and he's like, okay, shit has gone bad. Here's some information. Leave your stuff here. Don't take any of the stuff they gave you because they can track you. And go to this place and you'll meet somebody. And so they go there and it's the guy who originally briefed them. And he's like, apparently my government doesn't give a damn anymore. And I actually have moral qualms about this. So he gave them fake IDs, some money, and a ship. Mm-hmm. And said, basically, get out of Dodge. And so that's what they're doing, and they're very excited to have a ship.
Yeah, I'll bet.
It's an old-timey ship. It's enormous, though. I gave them a really giant, really old ship. It's kind of fun. But, yeah, so they're going to go off and do that. So that should be exciting. I saw a bunch of movies this week, because I was home.
Mm.
I'm working full-time this week.
Yeah, you said.
And... that proved to be a little rough. Monday and Tuesday at the ends, I felt really sore and really tired.
Mm-hmm.
Enough that basically Tuesday night I didn't sleep. And Wednesday I was still in pain and I was exhausted, so I stayed home. But now I'm being a little more careful on my meds. I was trying to wean myself off of medications. I think I was doing it a little too fast. So I'm kind of adjusting. And today has gone well. But being home and all that... I've seen a few movies recently. I've been watching a lot of horror movies. I talked about John Dies at the End, right?
I don't think so.
I thought last week I talked about that.
I don't remember, but
it's on Netflix. It's called John Dies at the End. I knew very little about it going in, except I'd heard about it on a podcast, and it falls into the genre of horror, science fiction, and comedy. So I watched it, and I really enjoyed it, and I'm not... I don't know that it's good or that I recommend it to people necessarily. I don't know. I really dug it, but there's not a real reason for it. It's of a type now. It's Well, first, there's two standard tropes that are in here now. One is the sort of Buffy the Vampire Slayer-esque thing where it's young, wise-ass people fighting supernatural things. But the other aspect has been around a little longer, but is becoming into fashion from, like, the Invisibles and stuff like that. The whole idea that the universe and the world has so much going on that most of us can't perceive, but if you do this thing or you take this drug, then you can perceive it all, and then hijinks ensue. And so it combines those sort of things. So it's sort of guys who, for various reasons, now are able to experience and see the weirdness of the universe around them, and they fend off the bad stuff to try and help people and things. It was fun. I enjoyed it. It was interesting. I liked it. It's not super high quality. You can totally skip it, but I enjoyed it. And it contains an actor by the name of Glenn Turman, who some of you may remember, but probably not. I always remember him from a TV show called Different World, spinoff of The Cosby Show, Hillman College.
Yeah.
There was a gentleman, I don't remember the character's actual name. He was a military man turned professor who was referred to as Dr. War and was originally just sort of a side character, but became a major cast member for, like, all the years it was on. And I always kind of enjoyed him, and I haven't seen him do anything, and then he does this. And he plays a not small role in this. He's the cranky black cop, you know. There's always the cranky black cop. He's that guy. But he has an interesting role, too, so it was kind of fun. And it was one of those where I saw the face, I'm like, I know that guy. I couldn't figure it out, and then I finally figured it out. Without having to look it up, I figured out who it was. Also saw a couple of shitty movies. I saw a movie called Alice in Murderland that has absolutely nothing to do with. With horror movies, there are a variety of ways you can appreciate a horror movie.
Sure.
A horror movie can be good, like any other, you know, interesting characters, good dialogue, shit like that, you know. Even if, like, it didn't do its horror very well, it could still just be a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Alternatively, it could do that stuff not well, but be scary. That would be a good one.
Mm-hmm.
It could also not do that stuff well, but have really fucked up grotesque effects that are, like, really entertaining because they're just so weird or whatever.
Okay.
I'm not saying everybody would go for that, but you can understand that can be a thing by which someone would appreciate a movie.
I do understand some people appreciate that.
Yes. It can deal with really weird, thought-provoking stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That, like one could argue Donnie Darko's big push is here.
Yeah.
That's the thing about that. I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't actually like Donnie Darko, but that's the thing, is it theoretically that can make people's minds churn stuff. And, of course, the great one, it can have lots of random gratuitous nudity and sex and weird shit like that. This movie literally has none of those, and it was made in 2010. It doesn't apply on any level, and I was expecting, if nothing else, it would apply on the last level, in that it's a movie where 90% of the cast is women. They're all in this same sorority. It's like a slasher film, and there's an excuse for them to dress up in costumes, and at another point, an excuse for them to get in the shower. And we still had no nudity, not even suggestive clothing. I'm like, what? I feel like some people had a video camera and said it would be fun this weekend to make a movie, and then decided to put it out into the world. I don't begrudge them making the movie, but nobody cares. And it's just terrible acting, dialogue written by a 12-year-old. Nothing in it was remotely any good. And not bad enough to, like, be hilarious.
Yeah.
It was very mediocre. Dudes standing in a room doing, like, but, I mean, they could convey lines. It wasn't, like, you could make it so ridiculous that you're just like, I don't even know. But no, this was, on no level was it entertaining. And then I saw a movie, we had sort of an Alice in Wonderland theme, I guess. I saw a movie called Alice Kills, but Alice is spelled with a Y instead of an I. And that one is kind of cool. That one's a much more psychological thing.
Yeah.
Two friends who have some issues anyway, and you sort of deal with that. They have a weird relationship, and they've sort of got a traumatic history and stuff. Anyway, one of them, when they're both severely altered on chemicals, accidentally kills the other one.
Mm.
And then believes she's haunted by her, and just basically slowly goes nuts. And it's still not good. but it was better, and it had a point. And it was, it had this dark and gritty feel, and it was clearly going someplace with this.
Yeah.
And did it, it, in some ways, it reminded me of Requiem for a Dream, but I didn't hate it. So that was nice. But I wasn't too into it either. I feel like there was another movie I watched that wasn't really great, but I don't know. I've been sitting around. I'm sick, you know. I watch a lot of that stuff. That and play Skyrim. And watch Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which I'm almost done with. I've crossed the 60-hour mark in Skyrim.
Mm.
So, and I still haven't gotten very far in the story.
Does the game you bought, does it have downloadable content already?
Yeah,
on
it's
it?
The legendary one, so it's got all that stuff.
And so you
I already
can...
own a couple pieces of land.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I ain't adopted no fucking kids.
And you haven't built a house or anything?
Oh, no, I've built one house. I've built the small version, and now I've got the big version, but it's not furnished. And I haven't built any wings on it. And then the other one I'm still working on. Because the big thing, honestly, is this point in the game, it's silly for me to be building houses. Like, it's a real waste of time and energy. But I can't help myself, so I was doing that a little bit.
Yeah, we downloaded it just recently, and so we've been sort of messing with that. It's kind of interesting.
And you can adopt children, but my character's not going to fucking do that.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm also at the point in the game where I'm starting to look stuff up so I can get, like, all the quests and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still avoiding stuff from the main plotline, although I'm pretty sure I know how it's basically going to go.
Yeah.
I feel like more so than Oblivion, there's not a lot of complications associated with this plotline.
No.
Like, spoiler alert, there's dragons.
Mm-hmm.
The dragons are bad. Kill the dragon. Kill the boss dragon. Everyone's happy. There's a war in there, but you don't have to mess with the war. Yeah. So we'll see. But anyway, we've wasted a lot of time, so
yep.
Let's do hat things.
Let's do.
Remember, if you'd like to write the hat, and believe me, you would, write themagicaldockinghat@gmail.com. Do me a favor. Try and do, like, one question per email. It's just easier on the hat. Don't do 40 of them. If you want to do a couple, that's okay, but try and... One per is really nice. And you don't need to do a lot. Only email if you have stuff you actually want us to talk about. I know we say we need the content, and we do. But we don't need... Like, if you're writing shit you don't care if we talk about, and that's all the stuff that we're talking about, why are any of us doing this?
Okay? That's what we ask ourselves every week.
You scared the fuck out of me.
I have a preemptive question.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, then you decided to sneak over here and yell. What?
Okay, you're the producer. You're the boss.
Have you ever considered that the hat is actually... I don't even know the right word. It's actually like an elder being that's crossover and is going to release evil upon our world.
Yes,
I've always assumed.
We have sort of thought that.
Yeah, no, I've always assumed.
But we don't know how to stop it, so...
The hat is basically... Cthulhu's mother, or whatever, yeah.
Mother?
Brother, whatever.
And so,
we're basically cultists.
Yeah, the longer we do this, the closer the end
comes.
We're
basically the insane cultists.
That explains the people trying to kill you.
Yep.
Oh, I thought that was explained by a lot of other things. Anyway.
Also, I mean, let's just say nobody's surprised. Nobody's surprised. People trying to kill you.
So Anonymous asks,
Anonymous,
if you did an episode where only one of you could speak, which of you should it be and why?
All right.
Well, that's pretty easy.
There's a short answer to this, but I also feel like there's a long answer.
There's not a long answer.
No, I think there is a long answer to this. There's an obvious short answer, and I think we both share the same short answer.
No,
it should be me, because y'all was boring.
Yeah, everybody knows what the answer
yes.
is to
no,
that question.
But
I'm kind of surprised someone asked it.
I think there's a longer answer, and I think it's interesting, because honestly, I think the true story is I think our listeners in general would appreciate and benefit from both forms. Because as a rule, our process is that we tend to keep each other in check. You don't let me get too random, pointless,
I don't know about that.
Shit like that. And I don't let you get too dull.
What do I do?
I don't know about that either.
You just yell from the other room and freak me out. Stop it!
You run the show.
Anyway.
I'm glad someone's running the show, because otherwise, but I don't know what
we do. You tend to provide the information. I tend to provide the comedy.
Wrong information.
That's fine. Nobody's coming to us as a resource. I really hope. But so I think if I was doing the show, just me speaking, mm-hmm. it would be a lot of jokes, of which probably a minority, but I like to think a significant minority, would actually be funny and land.
Oh, no, most of them would be funny. I mean,
I don't know, though. See,
you couldn't hit every time, because nobody does, but you'd...
No, but you underestimate your straight man powers here. Sitting here and cracking jokes off of myself, it doesn't work. There's a lot of jokes that need a duo involved. Abbott or Costello, not nearly as funny.
I know, but it's just about every time you try a joke, I think it's funny. Unless I think it's going, over the...
Yes.
But even then, I understand that it's humorous, what I'm saying? It's...
There'd be a lot of that. I feel like I would get bored... And so, I would pull up websites and shit and just, talk about the things there.
Well, it doesn't say that, it doesn't say that I couldn't be here laughing. You do all the talking. I just can't say anything.
That's true.
Which, then you'd have the best of both situations. And so
that's hilarious then, because then I would get really perverted and you couldn't stop.
That's right. That would be terrible.
Yeah, that would get really weird.
I would hate that.
And here's the thing.
I could groan, I suppose.
If that would sound weird.
And throw up.
All things considered. but here's the thing. So if you were the only one speaking, ideally, you would discuss a lot of philosophical issues or ideas or stuff, whatever had hurt.
As I'm prone to do, yes.
Yes. But that's ideally. Realistically, I think you would get stuck on whichever one you started with. And you would discuss it, and eventually hit a point where you were just circling, hoping you could phrase it better.
Maybe.
Because I usually stop it, and I'm like, we get it. You have reached the maximum facility we're going to get out of this theory and move you on. But you'd be like, still, it's not right. Let me see if I can explain it better. Unless... You were paying attention over here, because my eye rolling is a very effective tool.
Well, the thing is, on this show, I'm usually thinking out loud. I mean, if I was doing...
Your ability to think about one thing for an hour is not... is pretty...
Well,
intense.
What I'm saying is, if I were going to write an article or an essay or do a presentation, of course, I wouldn't present it that way.
No, since I'm
thinking of it right that moment,
you're
seeing...
You're not editing.
No, you're seeing my own thought process, which is very... Circle it, just like you're saying.
And it's stays on one thing, because, that's why you can't read no damn books.
Well, it takes me a long time, too, because I have to stop after a paragraph and think about it and think it through.
Exactly.
So it takes a long time to read things.
I hope you don't get to hold the remote in your house when you're watching movies.
Well, no, movies are different.
You would have to pause every 30 seconds.
Movies are different. I can let the whole movie go and then just think about it afterwards.
Yeah.
I can even watch several television. I can watch 6 hours of TV and then just sort of think about it later.
Oh, yeah.
But a book is different somehow.
Speaking of which, we are pretty deep into the second season of House of Cards. Now, still, it has been a long time since I have had a show that was of such quality that my wife and I can sit there before we bother to turn it on. And have a 20 to 30 minute conversation about the nature of a character who's not even the main character, and how much we think is intentional, how much is acted, how much is written, where we think it's going to go, have a little debate over some of this stuff. It's amazing.
Well, it's great when a movie or show, especially a series, can do that.
It's really provoking stuff. And we're having a lot of... I'm having a lot of things where, I don't like this character, and then over time, my view changes, or I realize... the shit I didn't like, I thought was, the fault of the show, and then I realized, no, that's the point they're making.
Mm-hmm.
There's stuff now that I think they're doing that's a little bit trite and a little bit derivative, and Trish, the specific things, Trish is very much of the belief that actually the character in question is intentionally trying to come off that way for other, to manipulate. Mm. And I'm like, oh, I thought it was poor writing. And what you're saying is it's writing that's so good. And this is one of the few shows I believe that's possible.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We had a discussion the other day. I'm like, I'm going to have to watch so-and-so more closely. Because I am fascinated by that. The second season started, and the first episode was a little bit dull. And I was like, maybe I can't really pick it up here, whatever. And then about mid through it, it grabs you. And suddenly it was very interesting.
I mean, that's the problem with watching bad TV. You forget how to learn how to watch good TV.
Yeah, yeah.
Or films too. It's you just get out of practice and then you're sort of surprised.
I don't remember having this since BSG, and before BSG, I don't remember the last time I had this kind of thing. Even shows I've loved have not necessarily been this cerebral for me.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's really fascinating.
Well, maybe we should start watching it because we watched like the first episode. And the thing is, political stuff doesn't really...
Well, that's the thing. I mean, eat that stuff up.
Even if it's really good, it just doesn't do anything for
me. I absolutely eat that stuff up. Yeah. I do not know why. Politics in general, I do not enjoy. But political thrillers and stuff, love them.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. But it's just... because they end up having a lot of characters. You know, it's like, it's about Kevin Spacey. Oh, look, there's his wife. Oh, look, there's a reporter. Yeah, there's a ton of characters. And all of them sort of get their narrative lines.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting. We just recently have been discussing our opinions of the president in the series, because the president hasn't been seen a lot, but we sort of discovered that we both had specific feelings about the president from the little that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean? And is that on purpose? And it's interesting. And I realized the other day, there is not a bad acting job in the bunch. And most of them are just stellar acting jobs, even from the most, like, fringe of characters. These people are just acting the shit out of this.
I wonder what early Americans would think of, you know, a fictional portrayal of government working as entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it's a fairly cynical picture of government.
Apparently,
you know what I'm saying?
Apparently the Chinese love House of Cards because it makes the U.S. government look like evil assholes.
Well, but, I mean, the sad and scary thing is there's ample evidence to suggest that it's fairly accurate in how things actually work. So
that's I've been playing
kind
with.
Of
I feel like they very intentionally
creepy even.
Can't make any character close enough to a real person that we could tell.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely set in present day. Just recently we established it is 2014. And the president in the show, spoiler alert, is white.
Yeah.
So it's not Obama. But every character, I'm like, I totally get this type. But they didn't. You're not like, oh my God, that's Ted Kennedy. Or, oh my God, that's, you know, obviously not him, Kennedy's dead. But you know what I mean. Like, there's not a specific famous politician. I'm like, that character is clearly that guy.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it's because they feel like they get a lot of shit.
Still, there's lots of ways you
But it makes it very plausible.
Sure.
Because we're not... I think if we made it look like this is this person and we have them doing this, then it'd be like, oh, that didn't really happen. Because it's not someone specific, it all seems incredibly plausible.
Well, but also, you know, when you're watching procedural cop shows or whatever, you know, if they were reality, there'd be a new serial killer on the streets every two weeks.
Yeah.
And so you realize that's fantastical. But in something like a show like this, there's something happening all the time and there's some big scandal and whatever, but that doesn't seem excessive for drama's sake. That seems fairly realistic too.
Yeah.
Like it's not.
And there's a reality to it. I mean, obviously there's the reality, oh, clearly our government is corrupt. But there's also the stuff that they're doing. In some cases, I'm like, of course they're doing it that way. I can't imagine getting something on that scale done otherwise.
No, right.
Now, that's not to say that maybe we'd be better off rearranging the whole thing and we wouldn't even have to do that.
Right.
But for the tasks that are in front of them, I am unsurprised in some cases of the weird, manipulative, and outside what you expect the system to be methods they do for doing it. Because I'm like, these are huge things. It's a scale issue again.
Yeah.
This country's enormous. And to get this stuff done, if you're going to do it on that scale, which we know about whether or not you should. But if you're gonna, like,
well, right, but that's,
you can't just clean up the corruption
in
the government.
No.
You'd have to downsize. You'd have to make it smaller.
That's exactly right, and that's the biggest anarchist argument against it, is that all of this stuff you guys are calling corruption and everything, it's necessary at this scale, which is proof that it shouldn't be done at this scale.
Yes.
Now, one thing that the show probably doesn't show, because it would be boring, is that it is true, I think, that for a lot of people on that level of government and in representative government, like congressmen and senators, there's a huge portion of their day that's spent doing not very interesting things.
I mean,
they always are dealing with something interesting and something dramatic, but in any given day, only part of their day can be dedicated to that thing.
You're reading your emails from constituents. Yeah, you're reading 500-page bills.
You're posing for pictures with Boy Scouts. On any given day, only a portion of your day will be spent doing that interesting thing, and the rest of it's going to be doing those kind of boring
things.
Well,
in some of these meetings, I mean, they're kind of dramatic, but it's funny, they have this big meeting and everybody leaves, and I'm like, nothing happened in that meeting.
Well, I'm sure that happens a lot.
And you get interesting tidbits, because Kevin Spacey still does his
breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah.
Thing.
And so sometimes he'll give you, like, a lot of it is him foreshadowing his plans, but sometimes he'll give you, like, what the hell that just was, you know, that kind of thing. And it's just really, it's written so well. They've built some amazing, and, like, the ability, again, spoiler, I'll be real careful with this one. There is one episode in which we get to look inside what could be considered the human and vulnerable part of Kevin Spacey's character. There is one and only one episode, in my opinion, where we see that. And it's done amazingly well. And it's not heavy-handed. Like, it doesn't announce, this is the episode where we're going to, you know, look at him when he was six and somebody broke his wagon or whatever. It's not that. It's really subtle. But as the episode finished, I was like, that was the point of that episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it was notable because of that. Like, you can, looking back, the whole way they did it was very clearly that was the point of that episode. But I wasn't aware of it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing. And Trish and I are constantly squirming in our seats with Robin Wright's character. The amazing stuff they do, and then the stuff that they're not doing on par with the rest. I'm like, oh, you could, like, it. My feelings on that, the character just stresses me out because it is so brilliantly written and dealt with in places. And other places, I'm like, oh, you dropped the ball here. It's amazing to me. But anyway, that's way off topic. So, I don't know what that says about if we were doing it separately. I might go on like that for a while if we were doing it separately. So, thank you, Lucky Stars. But that's the whole thing. This is the only way this works.
Well, yeah,
this show, insofar as anyone in the world, if they can say there is any uniqueness to our show, it can only be said of us together, which on one level is the everybody in the world is special bullshit. But no, what I mean is, if either of us, if you did a podcast by yourself, literally by yourself,
mm-hmm.
or if I did a podcast by myself, just alone, I guarantee you there would be at least a handful of other ones out there that were just like it.
Yeah.
They're probably not very popular, but they're out there.
Right.
I think one can make an argument for some uniqueness in our podcast, and I think it lies solely, not in us, but in our dynamic.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So, that's some powerful shit I got. Really, it feels profound. I kind of wish it was the end of the episode, because that would be good. But no, it's not. So we
should draw something else from that. Yeah.
Yes. I am considering calling the episode Trial Separation and just freak everybody out. Because we discussed the possibility.
Yeah.
But although, people, if you want, tell us. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and say, we want an episode where only one of you speaks, and we can do it back to back. We have one episode. We'll still come here. We'll sit here. One of us can't talk, and then the next week
that would make me very nervous.
It would be a weird episode. It would be very weird. But if the listeners want it, I'm willing to give it a shot.
Can I still yell stuff from the other room?
You can never yell things from the other room, ever. All right, we got one from Mark McKibben here, Mr. Hard Hat Number One.
You know, it's funny. He is Hard Hat Number One. but he says our show is okay, but not that great.
Yeah, I mean,
what's that say when our number one fan has that assessment
to
of
To be
our
fair, that's show. Mark. Mark would give his favorite thing out there 3 out of 5 stars.
I don't know.
Anyway, do you consider yourselves introverts or extroverts, and what do you think the other is?
Wow, we talked about this.
We kind of did the other day, a little bit. And first of all, as we discussed then, I don't think you can label somebody one or the other specifically. No. There are behaviors, and people can tend towards one or the other, but everybody's made up of both.
Although you do get a few people who are definitely,
hardcore.
Yeah, pretty hardcore one
or
the other.
It's a kidsy scale kind of deal, I suppose.
But it's probably like a bell curve where there's outliers on the extremes.
It really situational for most.
Yeah.
Like, totally introvert, and then if you get them around this select group of friends, they're suddenly very extrovert, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the short answer is I'm extrovert and you're an introvert. But I think there's a lot of complications to that.
Well, you're probably... Well, what I was just going to say was you're probably more of a mix than I am, but that's probably not true now that I think about it.
I think it's the other way, because here's the thing. I think I'm more of an extrovert than I want to be. No, it's a very serious thing in that there are some times where I try to sort of cut by moment. If I'm in a bad mood, if something's really bothering me, I go to work. I don't want to talk with people. I don't want to interact. I don't want to socialize. You know, this is bugging me. I can't keep it up. It just happens.
Yeah.
I love being alone. But when I am with people, like that call to assert myself socially is almost irresistible, and it's a problem. I can't in role playing games. I frequently have wanted to know what it's like to sort of play the quiet character in the background, because I do know I am entirely capable of watching other people play a role playing game and enjoying it. So I'm like, I want to play the background character this time. Where I can't seem to do it. It pushes up. I can't keep my mouth shut. This is a huge one, but
well. I have a variety of experiences. Like, I've been told, actually, that my personality is very different around you than I might be around other people.
Based on the podcast?
Based on being around you.
But, so, who are these people?
Well, just people.
Have they seen us?
Yeah, who knows?
Or they've only listened to the
podcast? They know us both, but they've seen me in situations where I'm not with you. And they know, well, when you're with Tony, you're a very different kind of person.
Really?
When
so
you're not with Tony.
You and a group of people, including me, one way. You and a group of people not including me, different.
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
No, you didn't know that?
How would I? I'm
well,
not there.
Because I thought we've discussed it.
I did not know this. I've never heard
I'd forgotten about this person saying so until I found an old email, and they were talking about it, and I remembered that other people have made that observation, too. It's just, I've got a number of experiences in this regard. There's the experience that's typified with you, where I, and this is the way this person described it too, I pretty much, you know, you lead the thing and I kind of help you lead it.
You latch on to, you become my sidekick.
Yeah, exactly. And that seems to be my role is, you know, if you're on a roll, I back off and maybe I'll be the laugh track for everybody else even. But if it looks like you need someone to play off of, someone to make fun of or whatever, I'll step in and do that. And if you need a break because you need to take a little sip of water or something, then I'll fill in with something that's boring, that'll get people a little bored so that you can come in and say something really funny. You see what I'm saying? Uh-huh. Kind of like a mini warm-up act while you're giving a pause.
Well, you get there's sort of an archetype for this that, I mean, and again, and I apologize if this gets at all insulting. I don't mean it that way, but what you're describing, I'm not saying that what you're saying is what I believe, but the archetype you're describing seems to me very much the little kid following the older kid, and sort of like almost a little hero worship thing where you follow them around because they're doing cool stuff and you'll help them out with that, or you'll just watch them. Or
well, maybe it's more like I mean, it seems to me that I've seen this kind of dynamic in things before where there's two guys, you know, they're the same age, maybe they went to school together, and the one's the talker and the other one's not, you know, the kind of the,
what I haven't
the
seen,
thinker
though,
and the talker and the
when
thinker
they're
kind
split
of thing.
Up, that it suddenly shifts.
Well, another experience I've had, and you're going to have a hard time believing this, mm-hmm. but there are some people who whose experience with me is fairly consistently that whenever we're together with a group of people, I am taking on more your role, and I'm cracking jokes, and I'm sort of the center of attention, and I'm being very what they would think of as extroverted, actually funny, actually interesting, you know,
no, I very
not telling jokes that die.
That's why I say you're mixed, because I have seen you, and you have times where you sort of become socially assertive, and in my mind, I've always kind of felt that something in your brain is saying somebody needs, like, this is the duty here. Like, otherwise we're just
no,
going to be an awkward
that is
thing.
Exactly.
So, you, but that you're perfect, you appear perfectly comfortable to do it.
Well.
That you're like, okay, I'll be the life of the party.
You said the word right there, duty.
Yeah.
Something happens where I realize that, okay, this has to happen, and, you know, I have done this for all my life in certain circumstances, so I'm sort of comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And I can usually do it without dying. Now, there are other circumstances.
Occasionally you've died.
No, yes, there are some times where I answer that call.
This happened in past lives.
No. There's some times where it looks like that needs to happen, and I just don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
Or I'm not in the right place to do it properly.
Yeah.
And I try, and I fail, and so those people know me as the guy who is just boring and not funny, but somehow sometimes tries to be that. And then there are other situations where I show up, and I don't say anything. I just watch what everybody else is doing, and then some people know me as that guy, the guy that sort of lurks and doesn't say anything, and he's the guy that...
And I think I have witnessed that in certain... circumstances also.
That, you know, those people, you know, that they never say anything, but then when they do, it's something kind of critical and important. I've been that person.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've been all four of those people in certain circumstances with certain people under certain conditions.
Which is why I think you're kind of mixed. But based on what I believe your motivations to be, I think one could argue that you're coming from a place of introverted tendencies,
well,
mostly.
That's why I consider myself an introvert, even though I largely reject the dichotomy. I want so much, like, if someone came to me and said, all right, William, you've done all four of those things, and you've even been reasonably good at them, which one do you want to do? I wouldn't even hesitate. I'd say, I would just sooner be the person that's watching.
And that's the thing. When we talk about introverted and extroverted tendencies and all that, there's what you do, and there's also what you would like to do.
Right. So,
And this is the other thing for me, because what I do is extrovert. Because I sometimes have that same feeling where I'm like, somebody needs to make this social gathering work. And I'm very good at that. And sometimes I do that because I feel that I have a need to. Like, it is my duty. I am required here because nobody else is stepping up to it. Sometimes I feel not only is it not my duty, somebody else's duty, and somebody else is trying, and I can't seem to stop myself from still doing it.
Well, for me, that's another thing is, when I'm being the quiet one, or when I'm being the sidekick, one of those two things, one of those introverted things, it feels natural and comfortable. I'm only doing the extroverted thing when I feel like someone needs to do it. And, you know, whenever
so
I'm...
So then it feels sort of fake.
Well, no, not really. When I'm doing it, and it's because it needs to be done, no, it doesn't feel fake, because I've done it a lot. And I like to do something that needs to get done, you know.
And you seem perfectly comfortable having conversations with strangers. I've seen you do it.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I can meet people. I don't have a problem. I mean, we were talking in the one podcast about how on that test I took, on one hand, I'd say I'd rather stay home and read. But on the other hand, I said that if I went to a party, I'd go right up to people and say hello. Because I do that, and I feel comfortable doing that. And I want to do that, because I do like people. I don't... That's another thing, is a lot of people think if you're introverted, you're antisocial, and that's not true. I do like people. In fact, I love people. I love humanity in general. I've got a lot of goodwill feelings toward people, and I like to meet people. And if I'm going to go to a party, I'm going to talk to people and meet people. That's the whole point. But, you know, the only... So But I do run into those times where I try to take that role and I'm not very good at it because of a variety of reasons. And I hate when that happens because for some reason I can't stop. You know, it's like I'm digging a hole for myself and I just keep doing it. And then the whole evening's just a disaster. Not that it wasn't going to be anyway. I mean, because nobody else was making it anything else but a disaster, but it becomes a personal disaster for me. And it's like, why didn't I just shut up?
There is a sort of social momentum.
Yeah.
That you sometimes can. Because, I mean, I have that too. I definitely have jumped in and be like, okay, let's make this happen. And just done a shitty job.
And I'm really surprised to hear that from you. I mean, I understand why it happens to me because it is sort of my secondary nature to do it. So naturally, I'm going to fail sometimes.
I'm not universally loved.
Well, but you're very quick-witted. I mean, that's my problem. Is yes. I'm not quick.
I like to think that, although actually I'm not as good as I would like to be. I still keep working on sort of my improv skills and stuff. But here's the thing: let's just say for a moment, I'm incredibly quick-witted. I'm really good at it. Let's say I'm also really funny. I'm not saying these are things. We're putting this in for thought experiment, well,
but
people.
But I think so these things about you, though.
So for the sake of argument here, let's say these things are true. I'm also quite strongly opinionated, quite assertive and upfront. Some would say quite lacking in tact in many occasions. And regardless, when you take all of those things, that does not guarantee that people are going to like that. For some people, all of those traits, or at least most of those traits, are actually kind of put off. So I can get in situations where I'm just not their bag.
Yeah, yeah. Which is...
I don't ride the middle. When I was younger, I was the person that everybody liked, but nobody was really into.
Yeah, yeah.
And then once puberty hit now, I pick a side, and people tend to like me or tend to not like me. But seldom do they feel eh about me.
Well, the thing that I usually do to make up for the fact that I'm not very smart and I don't think very fast and I'm really not funny generally is when I'm taking that role of sort of getting the social situation going, there's a lot of, you know, self-deprecating humor, yeah, and there's a lot of pulling other people into it, so it doesn't have to rely on me.
Yeah.
And that's probably a lot of the reason I die a lot of times is because, you know, sometimes that's just not going to work. Sometimes
people don't want to join you.
No, yeah. Sometimes
they're just sort of reaching out and nobody's grabbing.
Yeah, there are certain parties that nothing's going to save it, and there are certain parties where the only thing that's going to save it is if there's one really strong personality that can just be everything for everybody. Yeah. And I can't do that because that's not who I am. And so, but you know, I will try because I just feel compelled to, and then I can't stop. I can't realize, okay, this is wrong. I need to just let this die.
What's
now.
What's worse,
let
though, is
when
it gets to a point that you can recognize it and you still just can't stop it. I've had those. I'm like, this is not going well, but I do not know how to rein it.
Well, that's kind of what I'm talking about, too.
And that usually becomes with you then become the center of the attention for apologizing for people for being the center of attention. But that, yeah, no, it gets crazy. Anyway, we are over time. If you would like to submit your own special Sad William meme about how he's so self-deprecating and nobody likes him and it's terrible and he's not very smart, post them to the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com. I want to see them. It'll be hilarious.
Where would they even get pictures of me or anything?
I don't know. Figure it out, people. You're smart.
We were in the
smarter
newspaper.
Smarter than William, apparently.
We were in the newspaper a couple years ago.
So
a year ago.
Do that. Also, just go there to talk about whatever you want. You can talk with the producer. She hangs out there. She says stuff. It's been kind of talky lately. I've been pleased about that. There's been more conversation. Also, write the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, and also listen again next week, because that's how this works.
Mm-hmm.
It's a process. We're all growing together and learning about each other.
A collaboration,
about life.
If you will.
Yes, a collaboration in which you guys say nothing and we talk.
Well, they ask questions and
they
make
do.
Comments,
they do.
So they do say something.
They say things. I was lying earlier. I'm sorry. I need to grow beyond that. See, we just learned. We learned that I lie. So let's take that lesson. Now, turn to the back page in the unit and complete the review questions, and then leave the workbook on my desk.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.